Today's daf in Masechet Shabbat, brought to you from Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh, is daf Ayin Hey, and we're holding right there near the top of Omer of Zutra Bar Tuvia. So we've been in the middle yesterday. We learned all about the different inyanim of sewing and where it is that we got that in the Mishkan. Today we want to talk about another aspect of sewing, which you might have mistaken as not really being the act of sewing. You'll notice that very often when you've got poorly sewed pieces of material, what happens is that a piece of material sort of separates from the other, leaving the stitches between the two materials. And if you pull the thread tight, then you rebind the two pieces. So what you do is you pull it tight and then you make a knot, right? So says Rav Zutra Bar Tuvia, Amar Rav, if you do that on Shabbos and you stretch the thread taut, you'd be chayav echatas, because that is the equivalent of the initial tefirah, so that the tefirah really doesn't consist of moving the needle necessarily in and out of something. It consists of connecting two things, and in this fashion, you're connecting two things, you'd be chayav echatas. Now, there were three things that Rav Zutra Bar Tuvia was zocha to learn from Rav, and he repeated those things together. So that was one thing he said I learned. The other thing I learned from Rav that time was that somebody who learns anything from a magosh, and we don't know what that is yet, but we'll find out, he would be chayev misa b'dei shamayim. You can't learn from a guy like that. And hayodeh l'chashev tkufot. The third thing is, hayodeh l'chashev tkufot ba'azalot v'eino choshev, asur l'saper emenu. Somebody who is a bucky in astronomy and mathematics and would be able to utilize his understanding of the world, to have a deeper appreciation of the universe and HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence, and doesn't, because now he's become a Baal Teshuva, Chas V'Shalom, I don't want to think about mathematics or astronomy anymore. So because of that, you wouldn't be allowed to talk to such a person. Also, you're certainly not allowed to be mekabel any kind of hayros from him. This is actually what is paskin, halacha l'maaseh. You're not allowed to quote his name if he gives a psak halacha, because the person is being over on one of the most fundamental psukim, and we'll see, we're going to go through each one of these things. So what, first of all, what is a magushta? It's not only this sukim, because we often use that word. What is a magushta? So there's a general machlokus between Rav and Shmuel. Chad amar kashi, it means the same as the word has come to mean through the finally getting into English as a magician, a magushta. And a magician is just is a sorcerer kind of guy. You know, so he does magic tricks. V'chan omar gidufe. The other one says, no, this is a guy who is a min, and he's constantly writing these horrible articles to turn little Jewish boys astray from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he's always filled with horrible things to say about Yiddishkeit and about Torah and Chas V'Shalom, about the Bnei Olam. And that is a geduface. It's like going around blaspheming all the time. It must have been Rav, therefore, even though it said, you said, we don't know who said what. Rav and Shmuel argued, one said X and one said Y. But now I can see from Rav Zutra Bar Tuvia what Rav said, because Rav must have held that we're referring to a magushi as a min, as a blasphemer over here, because the Omer of Zutra Bar Tuvia Amar Rav, Halomei Davar Echad Min HaMagosh Chayev Misa, if you're learning anything, even if it's Dvar Torah, and you're learning this from a guy like that, you're Chayev Misa. So you think that you're going to, you know, you're going to go to Tel Aviv U and get this real insight into Torah from this guy who's got nothing but horrible things to say about Torah, then you're Chayev Misa. You can't learn about Torah from that. That proves that it must be referring to the din of Gidufe, because if you're going to tell me that it's only talking about a sorcerer, I mean, you're allowed to be a sorcerer's apprentice, because it says in the Torah, lo tilmad la'asot, it says beferish, don't learn in order to do, but you are allowed to learn la'avinu la'orot, because you got to understand the different dinim about kishuf and so on, and know how to deal with the Navi Sheker, or to deal with the Mechatshev, and the halacha. So therefore, it can't possibly be that Rav would have said, you can't learn a darn thing from him, you're mechuyev to learn from him sometimes. Tistayim, that proves clearly that Magushta, Libet Rav, is not referring to a magician, it's referring to a min. Omrev Shemeb Ben Pazi, Omrev Yeshua Ben Levi Mishum Bar Kapara. The third thing was that Kol HaYodeh L'Chashev Et Kufot HaMazalot V'Eino Choshev, anybody that was had the ability to understand them, as the Rambam points out, the math and the astronomy and the applications of such things to the world, and does not, you're not allowed to speak to him. Why? Because he's over on the Pasuk. Allah v'akatuv omer, and this is one of the horrible psukim Yeshayo, that these are the kind of people that their day consists of ayakinor, v'nevel, tov, v'chalil, v'yayin, mishtehem. They're busy having a great time. That po'al Hashem lo yabitu, u'ma'aseh yadav lo ra'u, they refuse to look at the godless of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's chokhmah in the olam, and they never pay any attention to the things that he created. Don't waste my time with the zoo, please. Then those kind of people are the ones that you're usher to be even associated with, certainly to quote, because in doing so, you not only are you over on actively refusing to be Mekayim the mitzvah of Avas Hashem, which is the Rambam explains that's the way to get to the mitzvah of Avas Hashem, but you are also, in a sense, ke'ilu spitting in the face of God. That's that beautiful that beautiful word that they say over from Rav Hirsch when he went to the Alps. That everybody's going to have to give ach din v'cheshbon to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Why didn't they go to see the Alps? He says, if you get up there, the Ribbono Shel Olam is going to ask me, hast du gesehen mein Alps? And did you visit my Alps? Or you didn't even care enough to go visit my Alps? Anyway, okay, so that's related to this inyan. And where do we see this? How do we know that it's a mitzvah? You're supposed to not only know how to do it, but you're supposed to show off your yediyah. You are supposed to let the Umay Sa'ilam know the depth of your wisdom. What would be a chokhmah bina that even they can understand? You tell them a little theory here and there, you know, maybe a theory of relativity or something like that. You know, some little Jew boy goes, throws them that, you know, so that they get a little sense of an understanding of what it is to be chokhmah bina la'inei ha'amim. So that would include ze chishuv tkufot u'mazalot. Okay, the next thing we had was the list of skin issues, which essentially ends with writing as well, because you write on these skins or prepare these skins. And so we're going to discuss for a moment. So we talked about Hatzat Tzvi. Now, Hatzat Tzvi went on to with Hashochto. And this gets us back again to trying to understand the general, universal application of that din. So we have a fascinating halacha. Somebody who traps that chilazon that he was going running after in the midbar, he finally gets hold of one, you know, and there it is in the bottom of the Sahara Desert in this ancient pool. Anyway, so he gets his chilazon. Now he's got to squeeze it in order to get the material, which we refer to over here as dam, but it isn't really dam. And the fact that we refer to it as dam has made a lot of problems for the Rishonim over here. I'll explain to you in a minute. But so this is actually a dye that is a dye. It's meant as a dye, and it, in the water, it's actually used by the chilazon, both for escape, as everybody knows, the octopus is ink kind of thing. But it also turns out that those things are used for reproduction, and they're used for mating purposes to be able to get rid of people that are rivals. So they're very much part of the entire development of life, and that's why they're so important. And when you bring it out into the sun, then you get the color of the tchelos that you want to, because it's photoreactive. In any event, so you need to squeeze the snail in order to get the excrement of this material. So if you do that, you tzad the chilazon, and then you squish it, Vaputz'o, you would only be mechayev one chatas for the malacha of tzeda. And this comes under hatzat tzvi, would be the same as hatzat chilazon. And Rabbi Yehuda says, no, you're mechayev two separate things, because you would also be chayev for squeezing out the dye, which would be a type of disha. Because when you detach something from where it's connected, it would be the same thing as like squeezing out fruit juice and making wine on Shabbos and so on. So that would be a type of disha. Amru lo, so the Chachamim said to him, it's not true. a ptiah of this kind is not the same as disha. Well, why not? Sure, sounds the same as disha. Omar Rava, my time at Rabbanan. Kasavri ein disha ela legidule karka. This is one of those issues that we spoke about before. We raised the question, legabi ma'amer, we had a machlokas, that some of the malachas are, again, meant to be defined at a higher level rather than at the most fundamental level. So over here, in terms of, obviously, of a fundamental level, who cares what the object is? But some of the malachas that are meant to be agricultural in nature, they are meant to provide, let's say, a type of muscle relaxant so that Barnea would be able to lower his hand when he gets these spasms of waving cups at a Zoom camera. So that would be a shiloh, whether that's refuah b'shabbos. I give up. Okay. That's called sympathetic medicine. So in this case, it may be that it's one of the specifically agricultural acts. Because of that, you can't apply it to a snail. All right. But that would be the Svarta Rabbana. But wait a minute. I mean, why aren't we talking about the fact that you're killing the darn thing? And if you're killing it, so then isn't that a type of shechita? And we had listed shechita, hatzad tzvi, and then ashochto. So why would you only be chayav on the tzedah, and maybe if you taina like Reb Yehuda, also on the disha, but why wouldn't you be chayav on the netilat neshama? You took its life. Omer Rabbi Yochanan, yep, that's a real problem. I mean, but look, I mean, you could certainly have squeezed it after it's already dead, in which case you wouldn't be chayav for killing it. I mean, so he doesn't want to mention it as a given that any time that you're going to be squeezing it, you're going to be killing it. So he left that out. Rava says no. That's not the way that you get it, actually, because you need to have a high quality dye which does not work as well if it isn't excreted by the live animal. So therefore, I said, we're talking about even in a case where you were pitzao chai, so it was still alive, and even so, there's no din of a separate chatos on a tilat neshama. Now, this is very strange. Why is that? Because vis-a-vis netilat neshama, you're a mitasek. There is no kavana here whatsoever to kill the thing. All you're trying to do is get the dye. Now, this sure seems to be a problem, right? Because up until now, we always said, asks the Gemara, that to the relationship of the dying to the dying is very profound, because every time you manage to get that dye, you end up dying. So why wouldn't you be chayiv? Because it's a psik reisha. And Abaye v'rova d'amri tarvayu, moda Rebbe Shimon b'psik reisha v'lo yamot. Isn't this the same as cutting off that chicken head to use as a little puppet for your kids and then claiming, well, I never meant the chicken to die. I only needed to borrow its head for a day. And it seems to me that that's the same thing you're saying over here. You can't be called a mitasek. Obviously, mitasek over here is a loose term that includes the entire gamut of something not being considered a malakas machsheves because it's not your kavana. And isn't this a classic example? And here we stumble upon a very important halacha of psik reisha. So please, this is going to give us two new terminologies for your book. Shainei hacha, this is different. And the reason that it's different is because the kama de it pe nishama tvei nechale ki echad alitzlo tzive. You don't want it to die, because the longer it stays alive, the higher the quality of the dye that you obtain will be, the clearer it will be. And therefore, what? Now, so according to Tosfos, the Gemara is saying that what this means is, the technical term is, that this is a psik Resha de lo nechale. I don't want the results. It's one thing when you're saying that I'm doing something, I'm not interested in the results. It's another thing when I'm actively doing my best to try to avoid those results. So the psik resha is not in this case, sufficient to give it a din of something that I am planning to do, because I am doing my best to actually not do that, and therefore by no stretch of the imagination, even if it becomes the unfortunate result of my taking out the dye stuff, I cannot call it that which I set out to do, because it will always be the result. Not when I'm working to avoid that result. This is the Tosfos' approach. Rashi's approach is that this is considered to be a psik resha de lo ichpatle, not de lo nechale, but de lo ichpatle. So according to Rashi, the only time that Rabbi Shimon is meida would be something that is lo ichpatle. But if it happens or it doesn't happen, and it's just that he doesn't have in kavona for it to happen. But you don't have to go so far to say that Rabbi Shimon would only maintain a davar she'eino miskaven in the case of a psik resha if it were specifically lo nechale. Now, this has to do with very complex sugyas that we haven't gotten up to in the nature of mekalkel and a separate machlokas between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda about what the din is of mekalkel bechabura, which could change our entire approach to certain malachas' relationship to Malachat Bakshevas. Because of that, now is not the place to discuss it, but here is the first place that we've met it. And therefore, it is very important to note. Psik resha delo nechale, and psik resha delo ichpatle. Okay, so in this case, therefore, you would not be chayav. Next case, the Mishnah says, if you shech that tzvi. Now, what exactly is the point of saying shechita? I mean, do we mean really shechita in the Mishkan? Did you have to do shechita for some reason? I mean, you only have to do shechita for korbanos, and that's not called building the Mishkan. And as far as getting the skins and so on, you didn't need to shech them. I mean, you could have killed them anyway. So is there a point specifically to mentioning shechita that the Mishnah mentions? So what would be the chiyav that relates specifically to shechita? Rav says, because you're dyeing the skin around the base hashchita, and therefore you're chayev because of tzoveya. So that would mean, whoa, the Gemara is going to ask, what does that mean? You're not chayev for nitilat neshama? We'll get to that in a minute. Shmuel says, no, the chayev is nitilat neshama, and it doesn't mean specifically shechita. We were just, again, talking about norms that we're used to dealing with. What is Rav talking about, Mishum Tzoveya? What do you mean? You do shechita, you're chayav for dying, you're not chayav for killing? I mean, you want to be on the killing end, not the dying end, if it's preferred. So why would he have said that you're chayav for dying? No, obviously, all Rav meant to say is that we could talk about shechita because there's another chiyav besides. Because why did the Mishnah use that particular case? To tell me that besides netilat neshama, you could be chayav multiple chataot because you'd also be chayav tzviya. Now, once we asked Rav that, Rav says, well, I see what's coming. And when all these smarty pies in the coming generations who really think they know everything and all of the previous generations were idiots, I know what they're going to say. Oh, Rav. Rav is the nut who said that you're chayav for dying when you do shechita. I think I better explain myself now before Nancy Pelosi gets ahead of me. So Omar Rav Milta de Amri, what I said, I better explain. Ema ba Milta, de lo leitu dari bat roy, I don't want those future generations of idiots to come around v'lechaku alai and they'll start laughing at me. You're going to ask me, what in the world, what is the point of being tzoveya when you're doing shechita? But my nechale, what's the great achievement of getting a neck that's dyed? Shows what they know about marketing. Necha de litvas becha shechita dama, ki echa de litzchazu inche velesu velis venumine. Because it makes the meat look freshly slaughtered, silly. So Nancy's going to have to go around spraying little colored paint on it to make it look that way. I do it the right way. There we go. The next case that we had was Melicha and Ibud, Amolcho v'Ama'avdo. Says the Gemara, that's not two different things. Salting skin is just part of the process of tanning the skin, right? You can't possibly call these two different things. Now, don't tell me, well, what do you mean? We just did the same thing, didn't we do it when we talked about, oh, he's back again. So we had three different types of selection processes, right? Because we listed separately, sifting it after it's flour, selecting it after I did the winnowing, and the winnowing itself. So we call those three separate things. So what's the big deal if we call Malicha a separate thing from the Ibud? Silly, silly, silly. It's not the same at all. Because over there, you're talking about different steps that are done at different points in the process. The first one, remember, if you're going to winnow it, that's the first presentation of the grain. Then selecting is selecting out the brocks and things like that. It's not even similar to winnowing. We're taking apart the different parts of the grain. It's a later stage in the process. The next phase of our cut-off sifting is only after you've ground it. So there you're even dealing with a different material, which is flour. Obviously, that's not the same as when I've got 10 different chemicals that I need to use on the ore. We're going to use each chemical, one of which is sodium chloride. So we're going to use each one and call it a different malacha. It's ridiculous. So malicha and ibud are exactly part of the same thing. So how could you say that? Both Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish say this is actually not accurate. And the Mishnah is listing two things which are really one thing. Remove one of these from that list, because you could refer to either one, because they're both just different ways of saying the same thing. And the missing one, which was the chisuri in the Mishnah, is sirtut. So sirtut is incising lines into the skin, which then you will cut along in order to make the cut correct. Or, of course, you could do sirtut as part of writing. Omar Rabba Baravuna, Haiman de Malach Bisra Chayimishu Me'abed. If you get yourself a nice salami that is good and hard, and you did that through being Moleach, that's called Ibud on the food. Rava says that's ridiculous. It's not an appropriate use of the word Ibud. You don't do Ibud on Ochlin. The point of Ibud is to make something permanently hardened in such a way that it could no longer ever be chewed on and eaten. I mean, the whole point of Ochlin is that you're only preserving. Preserving is a wrong understanding of tanning. Tanning is not just preserving skins, it's preserving through hardening and making them useful for something else. How can you call that a type of ibud? Makes no sense. Fine. We do answer it, of course, minarabona. No, it's not allowed to make a very salted kind of food that is going to be preserved. Omar Ravashi, afilu Rabba Baravuna, lo Omar lo de lokaboyla lo urcha. You should know when Rabba Baravuna said that you'd be chayev, he wasn't talking about making chofetz chayim salami. He was talking about making those really good beef jerkies and so on, if you make them with salt, which are hard as rock, and you use them to beat off marauders during the time between you eat them. And what's that?
Biltong.
No, biltong is not made with salt. Biltong is air dried.
Salted sausage.
What?
Salted sausage.
You do salt it, but you salt it for flavor. You don't salt it for preserving. I don't know. You can certainly make biltong without salt. This thing you can't do without salt. The whole idea of it is that it's a salted hunk. So then you take out Doc's Jolly Roger knife and, you know, you scrape off a few pieces and then you're able to eat it. So that is what he's talking about. And that's where you need that meat for a long journey, l'urcha. That's why it's considered to be the equivalent of malicha on a orot. But for home use, lebeta, lo mashri inish michle eitz. People don't turn their food into wood. Next things we add, memachko, you smooth down the skin by removing all of the hair and anything that was on it, and then you cut it to size. Omer avacha bar chanina. When we're talking about smoothing something down, if somebody is shaf bena amudim b'shabbat, chayav mishum memachek. Now Rashi has a very strange pirush on this piece of Gemara, and he says that if you hold on to, you know, very often, you get into the mood where you just look like walking round and round. Well, if you hold on to one of those pillars and you walk round and round on it, then you smooth the ground to such an extent that you turn the floor into like an equivalent of a tiled floor. That's called memachek. Tosfos says that's crazy. You can't be memachek floors. We said before that's considered to be binyan. How in the world did it become memachek? So Tosfos says, no, it's talking over here. You've got this skin, okay, and you're rubbing the skin against the wall as you go by every time to get it smoother, that is mipumech memachek. Fine, even though it's not the normal way you think you were doing memachek. Omer b'chiyom barava, shloshet dvorim sakli ravashi mishmed rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. There were three things I learned in the name of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. One of them was, ha-megarer roshei klunasot b'shabbat chaya meshu mechatech. That if you whittle the top of poles in order to get them to fit into something, whatever, that's called cutting. If you're memareach retiyah, you make a wound dressing by putting on some type of antibiotic cream, and then you smooth the cream over the area, you would be chayav mishum mimachek, because you're smoothing it down. And misatet et ha'even b'shabbat, you have a perfectly cut to size stone. However, it's not prettified yet, which you usually do by taking out, you know, making some marks in it and so on. Doing that, you would be chayav mishum maka bepatish. Om Reb Shimon ben Kizma, Om Reb Shimon ben Lokish. If you have a high quality kli and you want to put a picture on it, and you go ahead and you tzartzer on the kli, that's also maka bepatish. Or if you have boiled glass and you blow it into something, blowing it into that kli is chayav mishum maka bepatish. Omer Rav Yehuda, hayman deshokla kufi miglime. If you just got a new coat and you've got like little pieces of material sticking out on the edge, you take a scissors, you cut off the stuff that's sticking out, whether it's threads or whether it's maybe pieces of dirt that got caught in the end, you would also be chayav mishum maka bepatish. All of this is talking about where it really makes a difference to you. You did this because you want it to be completed. You don't want to wear it without completing it. And akotev shtei otiyot. Tana Rabbanan. Katav ota chad gedola. V'yesh b'mekomo lichtov shtayim. Suppose you wrote a very large size letter. There's room to write two smaller letters of the normal size that you would have written on this kind of material. You'd still be potter, because when it comes to writing, the significance is not in the size and the amount of ink. The significance is in the value of the symbol. Whereas machak ot gedola, but let's say you erased a large letter and there's place to write two smaller letters where that one letter was written, then you would actually be chayev, because the only point of memachek is in order to be able to be kotev, which is rather strange. And indeed, Rav Menachem Bar Yossi points out, well, it's weird, because zechomer b'memachek mi b'kotev. Haboneh, and then we had that list of putting it all together. Haboneh v'hasoter, hamichabeh v'hamavir, v'hamakeh b'patish. What exactly is a makeh b'patish? Rabba v'Rabbi Zera d'omer tarvayu. It's kol midi de'it pe gemar melacha. It is a very conceptual idea. Anything that has a last step that is done before it's viewed as being completed, that is the meaning of makeh b'patish. Again, according to Rashi, this was almost a formalistic final tap at the end, where the smithy would give to his actual smith in order to get everything back into shape to show that it's over. And that's what we're using. According to Tosfos, it means it's just taking an example of makeh b'patish. Generally, when you're working on something that you're hammering, you got to give it that last bang in order to make sure the nail is in perfectly. Fine. And then the Mishnah repeats itself, and it says, Elu avot melachot. What is the meaning of saying Elu for? What do you add with that? Elu is to tell me that Rebbe Eliezer is not correct. Rebbe Eliezer is mechayev al tolda b'mokom av. He says that I would be chayev even if I did a tolda that was done in a very different fashion, but is still underneath that av, that's considered to be like a different malacha. And then you would be chayev two separate things. According to him, it isn't true that there are only 39, unless you're only dealing with avot. And that's no. Elu, these and only these are going to be mechayev you, no matter how many different ways you do them. And it's, again, repeating Choser Achat. Why mention Choser Achat? That's Lafukim in Rabbi Yehuda. Because Rabbi Yehuda said that you have to add to the list of the Avot HaShovet VaHamidakdek. So in Shovet, what you do is you want to get those warp threads lined up properly, and you could do that with this little thing that's got a hook in it, where very often you can, really, it's really worthwhile to do this. Get onto YouTube and watch people setting up a warp. You'll get exactly the whole flavor of it, especially when it's done by hand on a little hand loom. What happens is, if you're dealing with 50 warp threads, they always get entangled, or they get stuck together. You're going to have to pull them apart to make sure that your weave is going to be okay. So that is called shovet, and middakdek would be, you would hit them with something that would be actually beating on them. And you afterwards on the weft, where it's sometimes you pulled it a little bit too tight. If you pull it too tight, it's never going to be part of the weave. Now again, on the loom, we had that comb that actually comes down, pushes it in properly under pressure at the right pressure. But when you're doing this by hand, so then you're going to have to do it manually, and you give it a bang to loosen it up a little bit so that it won't be too tight. Omrulo, those are not separate malachas. The shovet is part of mesach. That's, you're pulling apart those warp threads. That's what mesach is. It's just part of being mesach. And medagdeg, that is banging on that, that's considered to be part of the whole process of ariga. It's not ariga until you've pulled it in straight to join up with the rest of the weave that's been done. There's no reason why this should be a separate malacha. Because of that, the Mishnah wants to make sure that you understand. This is a definitive list. It doesn't include variations in terms of malachas, and it certainly doesn't include the kind of things that people look at as being separate things. Now, I know it's late, I just want to add this one piece, Baruch Hashem. We finished the malachas. One issue, which is Lafuki Mereb Eliezer, because this brings out very beautifully the machlokas we had earlier about what the difference is between a me'ein hamalacha and between a tolda. So Tosfos is bothered by the fact that since it says beferish in the Mishnah, before we got to all of this, it says ose melachot harbei me'ein melacha achat eino chayav ela achat. I mean, that's a statement right out in the Mishnah. What the heck do we need to repeat it at the end, elu, to tell me that it's not true what Reb Eliezer says, that you could be chayav in a tolda b'makom av? Now, you understand that according to the Rambam, that question is absolutely ridiculous, because the meaning of me'ein melacha achat has nothing to do with a tolda. And me'ein melacha achat is really the exact same melacha that is being done with a different kind of object. So if you're talking about planting a seed or implanting a sapling tree, you're doing exactly the same melacha, not an av and a tolda. And that would be the difference. It would be like talking about deuterium on the one hand and hydrogen on the other hand versus some kind of mineral that's got hydrogen in it versus pure hydrogen. I mean, one has nothing to do with the other. So one is a chemical difference, which means in the application of it and the way it's relating to things, I look at it differently. That's the tolda. Over there, for sure, we never discussed that. So if it looks entirely different, maybe Reb Eliezer is right. But to do the same thing and to be mechayev two separate isurim, one for hydrogen and one for deuterium, please, that we wouldn't do. And that's exactly the difference according to Rambam. The reason that Tosfos has the problem is because of his understanding with the Rabbeinu Hananel that me'ein melacha is basically synonymous with toldas. And that's why he understands it as opposed to Rashi, who says, well, some of them are me'ein melacha, but the pruning is not going to be me'ein melacha. So Tosfos says, okay, so he has to answer it by saying that I might have thought that me'ein melacha achat only potters you if you do two toldas. So they're both me'eins. You do two toldas of the same av. But maybe if you do in the av itself and a tolda, maybe you'd be chayev twice. That's his answer. So again, we see very clearly the difference in the approach here of the Rambam versus the Rabbeinu Hananel in understanding how our sets are created.